Monday, April 22nd, 2019, the city, Los Angeles, the hosts, Hayes Davenport, Alyssa Walker, Scott Frazier. Oh, what?
Whoa.
Sorry.
He's gone.
No Scott this week.
He was so tired of our Hyperion hyper local content.
Yeah, that so he fled to San Luis Obispo.
To see the world.
Yes.
Outside of our corner.
I think he was also mad. Like on his behalf, I think he's upset about not having 2,000 followers yet on Twitter. At S.A. Frazee, F-R-A-Z-I-E, that he actually left town. And if we want to get him back, I think we do have to get him to 2,000 followers. Wow, Didn't it feel like that's what that was about?
I mean, I feel like that's all he talks about, like constantly.
So instead of Scott this week, for our third host, we have KPCC / LAist reporter, third generation Angeleno, Matt Tinoco.
I'm here also on the podcast.
That is how we should always introduce ourselves. Your beat, housing homelessness, is that what you would say is housing, your focus?
It's housing officially. It's a lot of homelessness because that's directly related. It's the same thing.
Right.
I can't unpack the two. And there's there's not a lot of great information out there on this. And there's a lot of misinformation out there on this that I think confuses the issue. So a lot of homelessness, but housing and homelessness.
We are going to get into that at some point. First, we want to tell our LA stories. Who would like to begin with a story from this week? Matt is shaking his head. Should it be Matt?
I was shaking my head no, but I mean, I can basically just say that I spent a fair amount of time in my San Fernando Valley this week. And every single time, like I live in LA Metro over the hill now.
Yeah.
But whenever
you didn't make it over the hill until college, right? You never seen the other side of the hill.
I couldn't
until you went to USC. You didn't know there was anything over there. Like
your Ventura Freeway.
Your fellow villagers told you never to go over there because there were like monsters.
That's actually, see, the thing is that I also, besides the San Fernando Valley, I spent like basically my elementary school years were in Simi Valley. And people would literally say, don't go over the hill into the San Fernando Valley because that's where, like, you can't do that. You cannot leave Ventura County because once you cross the LA County line, wow, well, bad things will happen. like, that fear was very palpable. And now seeing where our country goes, I'm just like, oh, it all makes sense.
I
spent a lot of time in the valley. And then as Metro LA sort of goes through, it's like getting gentrified away. And like, I'm like, Van Nuys is still the same Van Nuys that it was 30 years ago, for better or for worse.
The same.
Not exactly the same, but it's basically, as I'm going around, I see a lot of, there's more commercial vacancy on this side of the hill. The businesses have, it's basically a lot of small mom and pop businesses that like are still there. Like obviously the same factors are still squeezing Van Nuys wherever, in the same way that they are over the hill, but it's less pronounced because I think just it's geographically isolated. Like, I mean, if you live in Reseda and work in like really anywhere over the hill, you're going to sit on the freeway for at least an hour and a half, which that's just, I don't know. That's enough of an effect to kind of shield it from the sort of forces that are really dramatically shaping, at least central LA.
Well, I can say as my story, we were on TV last week.
Yes, that's
all
right.
All of us.
Yes. All
which
of us. Including our third host, whose name I don't even remember.
I don't remember. He was at the end of the table. Yeah. I don't know, what to say about our experience, except that it was pretty cool to be all three of us together. And that was kind of like
that was nice.
It was a great experience. And we should say what we were on.
We were on Inside the Issues on Spectrum One, which we have each done individually. The show hosted by Alex Cohen.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah.
KPCC.
Oh, wow. Bringing it back around.
Yeah. And yeah, we've each done it.
Yeah, that's what I was going with my story. Yeah, we've all been on the show separately as guests. And it was so cool that we were all three there together on a segment about good podcasts. So we were, I assume, good.
We were one of, I think, only five good podcasts in the entire city. And this is like a legit show. So their opinion on what is like a good podcast is factual. Yeah. It's not an opinion show. It's a news show. So this is now officially a good podcast.
Yeah.
That was nice. Thank you to Alex Cohen for having us on. And I think we're going to be going on again sometime, at least one of us sometime soonish. Let's talk about, there was a vote in the city council this week. We have talked about SB 50 a little bit on this show in the past. This is the bill put forward by State Senator Scott Wiener. It's an updated version of SB 827 from last year. It's designed to upzone territories around bus lines.
Like, I call them territories.
Territories. around bus lines, rail lines, and now with a lot of jobs. And this version carves out lower income neighborhoods that would not be upzoned as quickly.
Sensitive communities.
Sensitive communities. Thank you very much.
Not the territories.
Yeah. The LA City Council voted on it this week. They voted on SB 827 last year. It was a unanimous vote against. They disavowed SB 827. This year, they made some changes to this bill to make it a little more progressive. Did it change anything in how the city council voted, Alyssa?
No, the answer is no. They unanimously
against. Yes. Those who were present, which I think was like 12 out of the 15.
Oh, yeah, there was only 12, I should say. Yeah. I mean, maybe some people just didn't show up. But yeah, they all got up there and said the same thing, something like, you know, this bill doesn't go far enough. It needs to do more for affordable housing. We don't need any more market rate housing. And the people whose job it is to make sure that the city is creating enough affordable housing is the same people who are up there.
Yeah, that you posted about that. And I thought that was an important thing to remember. This isn't like we've talked about rent control in the past, which is something that the hands of the city council are tied on. They are restricted by state law from expanding rent control. They can do whatever they want in terms of zoning. They can do anything they want in terms of affordability requirements.
Yeah, they could crank up the inclusionary housing restrictions that they have already created. They could make those zones bigger. They could require more units to be affordable.
Yeah.
And they haven't done any of those things.
We had council members like our most progressive council member, Mike Bonin, talking about how this state bill does not have high enough affordability requirements, doesn't encourage us to build as much affordable housing as we should. Basically saying, make us do more affordable housing.
I mean, that's how you, the only way you can take it, right?
Do it yourself.
Yeah. Strong activists.
And yeah, I mean, they could literally say we endorse it and we're going further if that was
absolutely
true. And actually the bill says if you want to make these things more stringent, you can city to city.
I think it would be great to take the example of ACT LA, the Alliance for Community Transit, which sent a letter to the authors of SB 50 saying, we have some concerns about this bill. We want more affordability requirements. If you make these changes, we will support it. We're not coming out against it right now. We're just saying we have concerns because this is very early in the process of this bill.
It seems way early, right? Like it's this. Why now? Why now? The day at the same meeting that you're going to vote for an emergency climate mobilization plan, like minutes later, be like, and we're not doing that.
I mean, I think presumably it's a signal to the state legislators where the city of Los Angeles is going to throw its weight, because the city of LA will still have a lot of influence with the state legislators who represent the part of our city in Sacramento. And there's a lot of them because there's so many people in like Southern, in LA, even city proper. And it's just, okay, here's where we stand. It's the same thing from last year. Like, I remember Paul Koretz saying it's going to turn West Los Angeles into Dubai.
That's right.
And then I remember Mike Bonin saying it's going to come back again and again and again, and we have to be vigilant about it. Just because they're coming for our zoning controls, I guess.
Also weighing in on SB 50 this week were John and Ken. These are, if you don't know, these are radio hosts. Matt works in radio. I guess you would say these are sort of what you aspire.
Yeah, these are like your contemporaries, wouldn't you say?
I wouldn't.
John and Ken are hosts on KFI. They are, I guess, most famous for basically single-handedly recalling Gray Davis years and years ago. They were also really behind recalling Mike Bonin for the road diets, like only like last year.
They're arguably the chief road diet haters.
Right.
And it is when people listen to John and Ken shouting about how horrible road diets are that they get inspired to make sure that Los Angeles is still moving, to keep it moving.
Keep it moving. Yeah. Keep Los Angeles moving.
That's a John and Kenism.
We should also point out that John and Ken are hugely popular.
Yes.
Right? They're like, would you say that, like, I don't know this for a fact, but probably the most listened to show, like talk radio show in LA.
I couldn't give you hard numbers.
Non-sports category.
But they are institutions in Los Angeles and Orange County.
Yes.
More stimulating talk radio here.
So they got into SB 50. We're going to listen to them talk. I do not know which is John and which is Ken. I'm not sure they even know themselves. Their voices are functionally identical. So I can't like,
I've heard people say that about this podcast before.
Oh, really? So let's play a little clip of John and Ken talking about SB 50.
I'm Patrick Carelci.
And I'm Adriana Cortez. And we're the host of Red Pilled America.
Sorry, that was just an ad that plays before the John and Ken podcast. If you want a little sense of what kind of audience we're talking about for the John and Ken show on KFI.
We got a lot ahead, including a bill that has made its way back to Sacramento, which could change the way everything is in Southern California. What I mean is homes. It is Senate Bill 50. It is the work of Scott the Wiener.
See, now this is also the level of comedy that I aspire to.
That's so funny.
Yes.
He said that single family homes are immoral.
Do you have that quote? I just saw that in the top of the email, but I didn't actually see
it. Oh, it's
quote.
In the, it's in that second part, the letter there.
Oh, okay.
It says that Wiener has said, quote, single family homes are immoral.
So I thought this part was kind of interesting. This is the first mention in the show of the email.
So who's the email from?
So this might be a coincidence, but talking about how Scott Wiener has referred to single family homes as immoral is part of the platform of the Stop SB 50 movement.
I've heard of this.
Right.
I've heard of this.
This is a movement that is funded by the AIDS Healthcare Foundation and is apparently sending press releases to John and Ken that they are
just openly reading
on the show.
On the
we should
air.
Do that yeah. more. Just be like, do you have that press? Can we just read that press release? Word for word, it would be so much easier.
That's basically our media system,
right? But they're just actually transparent about it. So many other shows pretend not to be reading a press release out loud on the show, but John and Ken are bravely willing to own up to this. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
That's telling, yeah.
What he wants to do is pass a law so that you can't have trees, yards, and parking spaces. Either they'd be eliminated or drastically slashed.
Now, Alyssa, you are historically an advocate for trees. How does it make you feel that this law would ban trees?
No, slash.
It would slash them.
Like a shredder would like
it would
come
drastically
down.
Slash trees.
Yeah, I mean, this is how I know that, you know, it's coming from the same source because the tree thing has also been a sticking point for so yards, parking lots, and trees, mm-hmm.
Slashed.
Okay.
Drastically right. slashed or slashed. Eliminated.
Or eliminated. I guess the same as slashed.
Building setbacks. Like you couldn't have space between the building and the front curb. Because whatever land space is available, he wants apartments.
Mm. Yeah,
I guess he wants to throw all the derelicts into the apartments.
So
here we go again.
Yes. Maybe 1 minute into their show, they've made this leap to building apartments in a neighborhood implies that derelicts will be moving in to a single family neighborhood.
I mean, I don't know if that was in the email word for word, but it is kind of a touchstone of their show talks a lot about. Yeah.
Yes.
So 1980s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but also 2019. I mean, this is pretty like
here.
What I appreciate about John and Ken. I mean, this is what people say about Trump all the time is they make the subtext text. like they are not afraid to say like so many other people will talk about apartment buildings in terms of like neighborhood character and things like that. But John and Ken are willing to say
the derelicts.
These are people that live in apartments are derelicts and they are coming to destroy your way of life.
And your trees.
So, this is part of their overall strategy that there's no single family homes because
I think it's all about derelicts. This isn't for the homeless problem. This is for the housing problem.
Yeah, I know, but they're forcing what they want to do.
Right,
is they want to force like Section 8 people into regular apartments.
It could be.
And they want more apartments built. And they don't want single family homes built because they take up too much space. And then having grass and trees takes up too much water. And then it causes sprawl, which means you're driving a car. There's going to be no driveways for the car. It's like the Green New Deal.
John Ken,
he clearly gets it.
He's making a very good case. I don't know about the tone that he's using. But if I were to make the case for SB 50, I would say Yeah, they want to put Section 8 people in regular apartments. They want
make sure that Section 8 people can get into regular apartments.
Yes, yes, and no parking for cars, and no more driveways. And
so clearly, they understand.
It's like the Green New Deal.
Yeah, that's the Green New Deal.
But there's a lot of in between there. There's a lot of people that are not vagrants, that are not Section 8 housing people, that cannot afford a single family home in California. They can't. Now, he may say too bad, which is fine. But what he wants to do is give them a shot with at least in an apartment, because even the rents are out of reach for a lot of people. There's just not anything being built, really, to speak of. Not enough.
So what? That's the market.
I don't know what he's saying there. I think he's trying to say that's the market.
That's the market. So what?
That's the market.
Are they doing? Do they like a good cop bad cop thing? Like,
I think maybe we get a little more information on the good cop's opinion in a little bit.
That's what we have to decide.
We've got a huge number. First of all, once you've invited millions of illegal immigrants, that's going to take up a lot of space where you could have put housing.
So 2 minutes in, we covered derelicts. Now we're on to illegal immigrants being responsible for the housing crisis.
Right. So now you've invited millions of people, and that's
presumably they're in some sort of housing. But
but they're they live with many people.
Yes,
to an apartment, people to a room, and. Had they not been here, then the existing citizens would have that much more space to build homes.
The case being, instead of building more apartments, we should
not build them.
We should not build them. And
then people won't come here.
Just let inequality get worse and worse and worse until something happens, I guess.
I mean, I think they would prefer we go farther than that and take an existing population of a million people and forcibly remove them from the city and ultimately the country.
I mean, if you took the million people out of Los Angeles, how
so, yes, he's going to now actually say that explicitly right now. I'm sorry for saying that for him.
How many square miles is that of housing?
My problem is we can't stop this. We can't stop the illegal immigrants. We can't stop the Section 8 people. We can't stop all the people that come to California for their dreams. And we're constantly being bombarded with this housing crisis problem to the point where now, they're blaming it on some of the homelessness.
Well, I know they are.
I wish we could stop people from coming.
I mean, you know what?
And realizing this is out of their grasp. Go somewhere else for a while. Build your life up. Come back. And when you can afford the home, come back.
People are not rational.
They're so close. You can't stop this. You can't stop any of these giant economic globalized trends that are in our local particularisms influence. Like we all see how they happen here. You can't stop any of these things. So maybe you should try and address them in a practical and constructive way instead of just jumping up and down and being like, no, it'll turn the West Side into Dubai. People are already leaving Los Angeles County.
So that is so interesting that you would say that, because that was going to come up in a little bit of this conversation somehow.
And we are losing population. There's just
right
a story
now.
Today that LA County's lost 13,000 people.
So somehow we're being asked to hold in our mind that there's this massive influx of people that we can't
border
sustain.
Crisis.
And all these people are like living 10 to a room or whatever.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we are losing population in this city, like a net loss.
No words here.
We have fewer people than we did.
Yeah, but not the state isn't. The state's at 40 million and still growing.
Right, but the number of citizens, Americans, is dropping.
But that's not, again, we can't stop that. We've tried to stop that.
But I know.
We're going to have more people. Immigrants, illegal, legal, illegal, whatever they are.
Right.
They're filling up.
But that, if they're going to invite tons of immigrants, Yeah, right. Then you're always going to have a housing shortage. And now you're starting to tell that, like, the regular people, the American citizens, that they can't own a house, that they can't build a house and have a yard and a driveway and a swimming pool and whatever else they want.
Yeah, I want to just add a couple hard numbers, because I was looking at those census numbers literally yesterday. Every year in LA County specifically, there's about 130,000 births and about 34,000 international migrants in. That's the net total. Just for context on the sort of population number flow here.
So the majority of the people that we are asking to either leave the city or to live in the house they were born in forever with their families are people that were born in the county.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And that bears out. If you look at the sort of out migration from Los Angeles County, I guess folks of all ages on the low end of the economic spectrum, but it's particularly it's under 18s. It's like families moving with a number of young kids leaving generally to Nevada, Arizona, or Texas. Under 30, like that is...
Which are, by the way, like the fastest growing places in America.
Counties, yeah.
Just being priced out of Los Angeles County, going to San Bernardino and then Riverside and then leaving from there.
Yes.
I mean, it works differently.
So
for
you're
each
welcome, Maricopa County, the fastest growing county in the United States. That's people that were born here and that we are subtly and in some cases explicitly telling to leave, like on this show.
There's already extremely stringent regulations on a lot of this. There's huge areas in Southern California that developers aren't allowed to build anymore. This is the whole Jerry Brown, Scott Wiener philosophy.
Well, the problem, too, is that they've built in areas that burn. That's what happened.
Sprawl
led them to build way up in areas that have never had homes before because there's a lot of brush and woods.
Well, there's so many dumb things that everybody does, and that's what's created a mess. This state was settled.
But we're unusual. I'm not saying I support this bill. I don't. But we're unusual.
That's my favorite part. This guy, one, John or Ken, that has been making this unbelievable case for SB 50, for building more in actual urban areas.
Right. Not to burn down.
Does not support the bill.
But we're unusual. When you look at other large American cities, they do have high-rise apartment buildings in a lot of places. Chicago, New York. All of them do. We're kind of unique in that way.
Because it's not really a city.
But you could make it one that way. You could make a city center.
It's too late.
Even San Francisco has higher buildings.
Yeah, but that's another little tiny strip of land, too. It's like Manhattan. You know, Chicago's pretty dead.
Right, but you can squish a lot of people in there if you build a lot of high-rise.
No, actually, you know what I think? I think all the towns, all the sections of Los Angeles should break up. I think there ought to be secessions all over the place.
It's now.
So ends
our discussion of SB 50. Now we're into all the cities seceding. I think that's an amazing. This is an amazing document.
I mean, they're not wrong about really anything except for the like super racist parts that they're bringing up.
I mean, at some point, that is kind of what it comes down to. I mean, they make so clear that they understand every argument in favor of this, and then they basically say, "But
we're unusual.
How we're racist?
What didn't they also call Scott Wiener like a vegan? Like
they call it, they said he had an emaciated vegan face."
I was just gonna say it's strange that they think that all the local municipalities should secede because that's basically effectively what we already have in terms of how government like. There's 19 million people living in the greater Los Angeles area, which is a massive urban, like just cancer on the earth. Mm-hmm. I don't understand when people say LA isn't a city, it isn't a city. I'm like, okay, well, you have 19 million people all on like the same water system. Like, I don't really understand why you can say they're not a part of the same like human civilization here, but they all have different governments in the six county region that is the Southern California Association of Governments. Like, that is Southern California. There's 188 different municipalities in it. 180-ish, somewhere around there. And the effect is that you have these own municipalities that have their, like, this is the whole issue. This is the whole case for SB 50 is that when local municipalities, when you retain land use control at a local level, the status quo is to not change anything about it. You have 180 different city councils that are all just like the LA City Council and equally content with just to maintain the status quo because that's basically what it's almost, I hesitate to say this, but it's basically what our government structure is designed to do. It's designed to not change anything and just leave it as is. And then when you have the state coming in here to try and preempt it, then you get this hysterical reaction that, oh my God, no, you can't usurp local control. The state of California has no idea what's appropriate for this random suburb that is just like basically every other suburb in the state of California.
John or Ken say that this isn't a city, but we share the same roads, the same water, the same transit system, to a large extent, the same
electrical
school system, power, so many different things. We have just organized it in the least efficient, sustainable, logical way possible. And John and Ken would like to just exactly like you're saying, maintain that system exactly the way it is. And I think it's not unfair to say that the Stop SB 50 movement, the way that they are approaching this issue, in contrast with Act LA, which is trying to take these propositions of upzoning and building more housing and do it in the most equitable way possible, the Stop SB 50 movement is much more closely aligned with John and Ken. And that's why they're sending them press releases, because they know this stuff will get play on the most racist, xenophobic programming in the Los Angeles area.
Did you catch the anti-SB50 mailer that got sent out in San Francisco?
You know what? I did. I did catch wind of that. Would you like to talk about that, Matt?
I think it's a good time to bring that up.
Yeah. I mean, I sheltered myself from most of the it was a mailer sent out by the anti-SB50 AIDS Health Foundation mechanism that had a picture, had multiple on both sides. It was just a fancy political mailer. It had James Baldwin on there. It had a James Baldwin quote. It was, I can't remember exactly what the words were.
Well, luckily I can.
Do it.
And it was, urban renewal means Negro removal. That was the exact quote. It's a reference to urban renewal programs in San Francisco in the 60s, which were actually targeted towards like blighted, underserved neighborhoods. They raised a ton of buildings where people actually lived. And like part of the goal was to make these communities more economically viable, to gentrify them. It is not the same as what SB50 is proposing to do. SB50 is targeted at higher income communities, job rich communities. And even the people that are the political allies of Stop SB50, who sent out this mailer, said that it was going way too far and disavowed it.
I mean, there's a legitimate conversation to be had over development for who and whether or not new buildings are accessible to folks who live in the neighborhoods around where they're built.
Yeah.
But that is not the conversation that's happening. And this is just jumping up and down and saying, just say no, we can't do this. And by that, you're just foreclosing on what is, it's an attempt to just free up local land use regulations from where they are right now.
Yes. One conversation could be, how do we produce more housing? How do we build more units to bring more people into the city
in an equitable manner?
Yes. And instead of, do not do this, do not add more housing units, which is where it feels like this movement is consistently coming from. Let's talk about homelessness. Have you spent a lot of time in Venice lately covering the action over there?
I go out to Venice maybe one or two days a month and just spend the
just
time talking.
Up.
I'm generally talking to people who are living outside in Venice, not necessarily people who live inside in Venice.
Well, one of the projects that is being proposed there is a 154-bed homeless shelter. This is part of the mayor's A Bridge Home project. Mike Bonin, the council member, is really behind this one. I think it's taking the place of a metro parking lot.
It's an empty metro or metro. Yes.
And there are some residents in Venice that are not happy with this development. And they announced this week that they have raised $200,000 to fund a lawsuit to stop this shelter from going up. One thing that I thought was interesting, this is in the Curbed article by Elijah Chiland. They said that those donations, $200,000, came from, do you know how many donors? Do you want to guess?
Four.
12.
You're in the same order of magnitude. It was 100. So 100 people, fewer people than would be sleeping in the shelter on any given night, have donated an average of $2,000 each to stop this shelter from going up.
And some of those people are probably already spending money for those planters, which were blocking the sidewalk that they were trying to. There was like a whole other fundraising campaign to like raise money for a beautification project where they would install planters on the sidewalk. So
on a sidewalk that was traditionally inhabited by an encampment of people who are homeless.
Yeah.
Yes. Matt, in your experience, does just throwing money at this, can neighborhoods raise hundreds of thousands of dollars and stop something like this from going up?
I think we're going to find out. But what I know is that the traditional tools used to sort of litigate developments into oblivion, as happens quite often in California, those tools are not available for this particular type of homeless shelter, basically, because the state in 2017, there was a state law passed by Assemblymember Phil Ting that's basically said that this particular type of homeless shelter, this interim bridge housing, in a specific municipality, so long as the municipality declares a shelter crisis, is exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act review process.
So normally, that the shorthand for that is CEQA. Normally, you could file a CEQA suit. It would basically be a layup to at least slow down this project for
to make it into a shelter husk or something. Yes. Yeah,
for years and years, they could slow this down, if not for this law.
Yeah, I think the one that I am just waiting to see, because it is my understanding that there has not been an actual lawsuit filed. It is just there's a potential act of litigation. There's also the California Coastal Act, which this is in the Coastal Act's jurisdiction. But the California Coastal Commission signed off on this particular thing unanimously, this particular shelter.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, like the Coastal Commission signed off on it and was fine with it. I think this will also parallel what's happening in San Francisco, because there's a shelter proposal on the Embarcadero, and you have a very similar reaction. You have a bunch of locals who are fundraising a massive amount of money, presumably to litigate the thing into oblivion, mm-hmm. which I wouldn't put it past the American legal system to find some little thing here or there that might be an issue, but that's something that we have to find out. But the typical tools, like the CEQA lawsuit, is not a valid thing.
In San Francisco, though, with that Embarcadero shelter, there's another group that raised, that was pro-shelter, that raised even more money than right. the anti-safe Embarcadero group, which I have not seen happen in Venice.
I have not seen that happen either. I'm sure there are, I know for a fact that there are people on the ground in Venice who are very supportive of this project. They are not engaged in as active a fundraising effort. But I'll point out that Safe Embarcadero raised $100,000 and made way more news than the Venice Stakeholders Association, which is the group that is fighting the shelter.
Well, they were
in
like a Giants game holding up their, they were like,
they were
Giants fans.
It was a good look.
Yeah, yeah, they're just better at, at PR
good
for the Giants.
It's good
fans.
For Giants fans. Yeah. Yeah. But there's also another lawsuit we should talk about in Venice, too, because there's another, not bridge housing, but a supportive housing project that neighbors have tried to stop as well, right? Like there's multiple projects where people are trying to get housed and...
Yeah, what is not exempt from CEQA are the affordable housing, supportive housing, below market rate subsidized, government subsidized housing. And that's basically the mode of building below market rate housing is you have... a developer who strings together funding from a variety of different public and private sources. And then they're like, okay, we're going to build this 79-unit apartment building in this place. It'll be open for folks who make less than, like, this. There are very strict requirements as to, like, what the income level can be. But it's like, okay, so say there's a family that makes 30% of the area median income. Those people are eligible to apply for a spot in this building. And those also attract those are not CEQA exempt right now. So mm-hmm. those are still susceptible to that sort of litigation, which that's what like the Triple H, money is supposed to be building. And there's a history of those projects just going down in flames, because if neighbors will litigate an affordable housing complex, it's what John and Ken were saying earlier. So it's apartments are filled with derelicts, they're filled with Section 8 recipients, whatever. That perception is what prompts the response to just below market rate subsidized housing, mm-hmm. which in Los Angeles, we need, I believe the number has been circulating out that we need 500,000 of those units that we just don't have. Mm-hmm. We'll find out what happens, I guess.
Let's talk about, we got kind of a status report on homelessness issues from the mayor this week. He did his State of the City. Were you guys there? Did you watch?
I read the speech before it happened.
Okay.
Yeah, they released an embargoed version, but yeah, I didn't watch it.
At LAS, they did this great thing where they annotated and fact-checked the speech. So you can look at their story at LAS and you can see all the sections broken out and with reporters like adding commentary about what was true and what was hype.
Let's listen to Eric Garcetti talking about homelessness.
Fighting homelessness is not for the faint of heart. This is tough, tough work. And like you, I'm as frustrated about any encampment on any sidewalk in our city. Too many of us see our brothers and sisters in tents in our neighborhoods, or a man sleeping on our corner who still hasn't got the help that he needs.
So he does refer to people who are homeless as our brothers and sisters. It's a he takes a empathetic tone with them. I do question the framing of too many of us look at these issues on a daily basis instead of.
Well, he kind of led with like the problem is encampments and
frustrated as encampments.
Yeah, I'm frustrated instead of starting with the
human suffering.
Yeah, the human part of it.
I think there's another way to frame it, which is saying too many of us are
homeless
to live outside.
The stat is that of all the people on the street in LA County, more than 60% of them have lived in LA County for more than 20 years. So it's like 2/3 are long. They're longtime county residents who have fallen off the bottom of the housing market, basically.
Yes. And the framing to me, I understand where it's coming from because I'm sure it reflects the voices that he hears on this issue
from Venice.
Yes. which is people calling 311 all day long saying,
I'm frustrated.
Please bulldoze this encampment out of my neighborhood. That's just so clearly who he's talking to. He's saying, I understand where you guys are coming from. I am as frustrated with these encampments as you are. He's not talking to people who are homeless who are also constituents of this city.
It was like three very disconnected and also not very good statements in a row.
And I get the sentiment behind these are our brothers and sisters, but it's still not saying.
You can just throw that in anywhere.
But
you know?
It's still not saying these are us. This is us, hit.
This is us.
TV show.
Yes, we can point to reasons that slow us. Barriers we didn't see coming. NIMBYism that slows down a project. Lawsuits more focused on people's stuff on the streets and how quickly we can move them indoors. A statewide housing crisis that hasn't gotten any better. So yes, but some days I'm frustrated.
Who are those people cheering for or what is that?
Yes. So that was the only part that got cheers. I don't know if you noticed.
It's weird. That was a weird few lines again, right?
He talks about three impediments to ending homelessness. One is NIMBYism, people actively trying to keep homeless housing out of their neighborhoods. One is lawsuits that are more focused on people keeping their stuff on the street.
Personal property in the right of way.
Yes. Than getting into housing. And the last was the housing crisis in general.
Okay,
so those things are equated, three impediments.
But what is he saying when he's saying lawsuits more focused on people's stuff than what? Like, what is more important than people's being able to live with their belongings and have them not taken away from them? Like,
what do you think he's saying, Matt?
I think he's referencing a specific case called Mitchell v. Los Angeles that is going to be settled at some point on what terms we are not sure yet, or at least publicly have not been made available, which basically Mitchell v. LA was a case that revolved around a number of Skid Row residents basically sued the city of LA a few years ago. I think it was 2012 for seizing and destroying their personal property off of the street, including medicine and blankets and identifying information. And then seizing and destroying that property, and then they didn't get it back, which that happens every day around our city where you have enough 311 complaints, the city will send a sanitation team and police and outreach workers.
And people have died because their medication was taken away from them.
There's a man named Joe Reyes who died under that exact circumstance.
That is what it seems, the official, yes, that is what it seems like happened in that case, where he had his heart medication, he had heart conditions, he had heart trouble. His heart medications were lost in what's called a rapid response encampment action, which basically means there's no notice. And maybe he wasn't, I don't think in this case he was at the tent because he was employed at the time. When he returned, his stuff was gone because he wasn't there. His property was unattended, which means that if unattended property can be seized without notice under this particular, in this particular situation, as LA Municipal Code says, it's okay.
Yeah. So these people who say, get a job. Also say to someone who did go get a job and left his
get a job, but don't leave your tent.
I mean, that's for the body to survive without shelter, you require blankets. You need somewhere to kind of go to the bathroom, which is not a bathroom because there's no bathrooms out in the public right of way. But you need bags to store stuff in. Basically, that's what happens. That's how the 50,000-ish people who live outside in Los Angeles County use the facilities. They go in a bag and take it somewhere else, and all of that stuff happens in the public right of way, in the sidewalks, on state property, on freeways. It all happens on public property, and the tension in Mitchell v. LA, to get back to that, was, well, maybe there should be a limit on the amount of personal property that people are allowed to have in the public right of way, Which if when in the mayor's, when the mayor said that and people were cheering, that's he's the mayor saying that we shouldn't be getting distracted in this, I think is, it's challenging because there's not an alternative. Like the city's language itself, like the city's municipal code language says that these people have no alternative but to have stuff in the public right of way. And the lawsuit was about, okay, well maybe they shouldn't have there. It was it, the lawsuit was contesting the city's, what happens in practice where the city comes out and enforces. Basically, it says, no, you can't have public property in the public right of way, or you have to have only 60 gallons of public property in the right, public right of way. And I mean, we'll see what happens with that lawsuit, but it's, yeah.
I think the suggestion is by preventing us from destroying people's property, you make it harder for us to get them into housing. So like once we destroy all their stuff, they will be more willing to move into a shelter once they don't have the comforts of a tent. I mean, he talks about that as an impediment to getting people into housing, making sure people can keep their stuff. So can you talk about, Matt, the example of El Pueblo specifically? This is the first bridge shelter that opened downtown. How did that manifest in practice with El Pueblo?
So around all, the mayor's office has what's called the attempt to expand Los Angeles is the city of LA's shelter system is an initiative by the mayor's office called A Bridge Home. And it's basically to erect these, a variety of different structures basically to house, like to build more shelter beds because we have a very limited shelter system in Los Angeles County, mm-hmm. and basically provide an alternative for that includes storage for people to, have a place to sleep that is not in the public right of way. And
we've talked about the ones going up in Hollywood on Trader Boulevard, mm-hmm. The one in Venice we just talked about, that's in a Bridge Home project. But the first one was near Olvera Street downtown, and that complex is called El Pueblo.
El Puente.
They changed the name.
Sorry. Yeah, it used to be called El Pueblo.
Well, yeah, they didn't want it to be the same name as like the birthplace of the city.
Got it.
But anyway, the whole effect of what's relevant right now is that as a carrot, for neighborhoods to accept these, quote, accept these shelters, is the increase in police enforcement of a couple of specific city ordinances in a defined area around them. They're called special enforcement and cleanup zones. Special enforcement, definitely. And it's basically in that area. The effect is basically in that area, there cannot be encampments. And that's the city's, that's the mechanism by which the city uses to try and coax neighborhoods to accept these. But the challenge is that where the shelters are being put, or at least the ones that have been cited so far that I'm familiar with, they're placed in areas that have many more people living outside in that special enforcement zone than the shelter can actually hold. So like the El Puente shelter holds, I believe it's 45 people in the area around there in the weeks leading up to this. The mayor's office told a number of press at a briefing, two weeks ago, that they counted about 180 structures in that area.
Yeah.
None of which were allowed to remain after that shelter opened. And the effect is basically, okay, so 45 people, some of who are from that area get in, also others who were not from that area, move into the Bridge housing shelter, and then everybody else is made to move somewhere else, mm-hmm. which it's great. We have 45 beds, but also then, I mean, people, you're moving the issue somewhere else, which...
Yeah, and I think the number was like 180 or something like that was the number of encampment or like tents that area.
That was what the mayor's office said. I was in the area before the Bridge shelter opened. I counted about 80 tents. Mm-hmm. It was still more than the shelter could hold.
Yeah. And the mayor actually talked about that area specifically in the state of the city, El Puente. And he said that area had experienced a 60% decrease in, quote, tents and crime.
Oh, yeah. So this was the other. Do you have that clip or do you?
I don't have the clip.
That was really an interesting metric, which I didn't know we were measuring.
That's one.
I didn't know we were
stat.
Yeah. I didn't know we were measuring tents as a, you know, a statistic.
We do
right?
measure tents. It's funky to realize they know where all the tents are.
But a 60% decrease in tents and crime.
I think it's like tying those two things together in the same sentence.
I mean,
right?
How much of that decrease is coming from crime and how much from tents? I mean, so
maybe both were 60.
Just numerically, if it was in, I mean, they said there were 180 like tents in the encampments around there.
So how much crime, how much would crime go down if you had?
It feels like crime must have gone up.
unless what it is having a tent is defined as a crime, which between the hours right. of 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. it is. Maybe that's it.
That was a problematic line, I felt like.
Matt, you also talked about some of the mayor's quotes on investment in homelessness. And
he said, I believe over the past 3 years, we've increased investments in our shelter system by 3 times. Mm-hmm. Between 2017 and 2018, the number of shelter beds, like what's classified as shelter beds in LA County, dropped by about 1,000.
Right. But Lhasa got at you about that, right?
I hesitate to say Lhasa as so much as like a couple individual people within this large agency. Somebody contested that, well, no, actually the number of emergency shelter beds increased. And which is true, the number of beds that are technically emergency shelter beds increased during this time period. The number of another type of bed that is classified as a shelter bed under federal definitions, transitional housing, decreased enough so that the effect between 2017 and 2018 were the number of beds available for people experiencing homelessness mm-hmm. to like go get referred to on like, hey, I need somewhere to go. Where do I go? The number of beds decreased.
But how is that possible when we've been spending all this money?
That's a good question. I don't have a firm answer for, I don't know. There's a pivot away from transitional housing towards what's called rapid rehousing.
Yep.
I don't know yep. how those figure in within the classifications of housing versus, I think that might be permanent housing. Those are probably consolidated.
So that would be good. And maybe that would be.
The mayor gave some numbers on that.
If we had those numbers.
They have
as
really.
As compared to tents and crime.
They have really focused on rapid rehousing and talked about how they've rehoused over like 10,000 people over the course of the year. That program is designed for not chronically homeless people that just fell out of housing, trying to get them off the street as quickly as possible. And I think families are also emphasized in that program.
Yeah. The idea behind rapid rehousing is basically it's easy. If somebody has been homeless for 4 days, it's easier to get them back into housing than somebody who's been homeless for 4 months or 4 years yeah. or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And the idea is just, okay, well, if we give, it's basically a voucher. The city or county or whatever, there's a number of different agencies that do it. We'll provide a voucher to the family and say, okay, here there, you can use this fund. And it depends again, based on each agency, but the effect is that they are placed into a room or a place that where they can live. That's not on the street. And then they aren't on the street. They have to over a number of months or years, depending on the contract, take on the subsidy will expire and they have to start paying for it themselves. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they can, sometimes they can't.
So we're coming up on a pretty important metric, which is the homeless count numbers are going to come out next couple weeks. Like it's this month. Usually,
I've been
right?
told the end of May, early June. That's the best
a long
I know.
Time. We did the count in January.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This will be the third year where USC is doing the data analysis. Before then, it was, it's a funny thing that happened with the, I believe it was the 2017 numbers. Mm-hmm. Because up until that point, the count, the data that, okay, so the homeless count happens. Everybody turns in, all the volunteers turn in their information sheets to the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, LASA. And that data gets analyzed. Mm-hmm. Up until 2017, that data was being analyzed by the University of North Carolina. And in 2017, I believe they produced a number that said that there were, I think it was 58,000 people on the streets that year. But then the contract changed. It went to analysts at USC. Then immediately USC revised the number back down. They said that the youth count was inaccurate. And actually it was, I don't remember the exact numbers. I think it went from somewhere like 6,000 plus minus 2,000 mm-hmm. down to like 3,000. It was a drop, and basically the overall count went from like 58,000 to 54,000. And then again, last year there was another decrease in the official count. What was strange about the 2018 numbers was that there was officially a decrease in the number of people on the street from like 54,000 to 52,000 about, which is what we are at right now. But the number of like encampment structures that volunteers counted went up, mm-hmm. Which
more single family structures,
single family like. Tents, I guess.
Yeah.
But the explanation that I've received, and I ask everybody I can about this, is basically that, well, the number of tents and vehicles, there were more of them, but the number of people living inside of those decreased. That like the is a metric that's like the average population density of a tent.
Which, by the way, I just want to point out, when you do the count, you do not count the number of people inside a tent. And I know USC, like, they send out people to do more precise counts. So maybe they have a sample of tents and they count the number of people inside. But when the big volunteer effort happens, you count the tents. You do not knock on the tent and say how many people are living in this tent or car or whatever. So however they arrived at that number, it wasn't through the through the volunteer count.
Where it is very useful is because it's hard. It's hard because to try and like cover an area as vast as Los Angeles County is it's daunting. It's very challenging. What it is good for is that it can provide local providers. So say I'm a provider who's targeting youth homelessness in Hollywood. There's less youth homelessness in Hollywood than there was last year. Okay, maybe I'm doing something right. The hard thing with the big countywide, there are 52,300 people who are homeless in Los Angeles County, and 11,000 of them are sheltered and 41,000 of them are unsheltered. The hard thing with that, what's hard for me is everybody acknowledges that this is an undercount. There are more people who are homeless in Los Angeles County than the number of people who are counted. But then use it as a political victory. Okay, the number dropped from 54,000 to 52,000. Great, everything's going right. There are a lot of things that are going right, but there's so much that needs to be going much, much better. And it's hard because when you start trying to think about how many people who are actually, 52,000 is already a very daunting number if we're going to try and service that many people on the street. But then it's like, okay, well, how many more are there? How many? And there was Orange County communities recently redid a couple communities in Orange County redid, they had the official point in time count, and a number of volunteers basically were like, okay, well, we're just going to do it on our own just to see how.
We talked about this, I think, based on an article that maybe you wrote.
It was Jill Replicon.
Oh, okay. That's right.
But they found that there was a 60%. When a neighborhood coalition went out and counted people, they found 60% more people than the official count had.
So what does that mean for LA?
Yeah, exactly. So if our official number is 52, then okay, well, if there's 60%, then that's 80? I don't know. And also you also have, that's street homelessness in theory. In theory, that number captures the number of people living in their vehicles, but there are many, many, many more people living in vehicles than are on the street. I couldn't tell you an actual number. I've heard numbers in the hundreds of thousands for the number of people living in their vehicles in Los Angeles County, which then you start, and which people, those people are also homeless because a vehicle is not a place to live. And then if you start oh my God, are there 200,000 people who are home, by HUD's definition in it, that's inconceivable. And our infrastructure can't even deal with 52,000 people. So right.
It doesn't include people that are living in structures that are not, say, designed for human habitation.
That's the definition.
Yes, in sheds and back houses that don't have sometimes electricity or plumbing. Yep. There are thousands of people in the city that live under these conditions that are not part of this.
Couch surfing is not included. Nope. That sort
right.
of
motels. Hotel homelessness is not included. Yeah. That is extremely common. All this is to say, the mayor, in his discussion of homelessness, said over and over again, we will end this. We will defeat this. He has talked about 2028 as a timeline when the Olympics are happening. The pace is going to have to increase drastically for that to happen, because if we're cutting the number by 2,000 a year, if last year's pace is the pace that we're going to continue.
A month. That was what he said, at least. Sorry.
Well, cutting the number because the decrease was from 54,000 to 52,000.
Yes, yeah.
From year to year.
Right.
Then it will take 25 years for us to get. I don't think anyone anticipates that we will ever get to zero. But to even get to functional zero, it will take decades at this pace, which is optimistic.
Yeah.
This pace is not more optimistic than the actual numbers is what you're saying.
I mean, there is a lot of great work happening locally, but the problem is that the scale of the problem is so, so much bigger than our current infrastructure can deal with. And really what I've been thinking, as I've been learning as much as I can about this, I don't think this local governments can even deal with it. I don't think the city of Los Angeles has the resources to house the number of people who are homeless. I don't think the county of Los Angeles has the resources. The state of California might, the federal government definitely, because this is also not a Los Angeles issue. This is every city in the country has homelessness. Really, it's an international problem. That's a different discussion. But it's a federal, to me, as I look at this and I see what's happened in every single city in the country, This is something that requires federal intervention because it was basically caused by federal social safety net cuts during the 70s and 80s, federal housing development cuts in the 70s and 80s. And it hasn't changed since 1980, whenever. It's the same world that we had then. And it's just now we our wages have not gone up, but the cost of housing is way higher than it was in 1988.
What do you have your eye on locally for different proposals to end homelessness here? Anything that we haven't talked about?
I am very curious to see what's going to happen because the mayor's office does have a Bridge Home, which is basically the effect, the attempt to expand LA's shelter system. Supposedly they have 24 sites where it's in consideration, which would mean a few years from now, we would have 24 new shelters, new navigation centers, new interim housing, whatever structures for people to go into.
And how many are public, like five or six at this point?
In theory, they're all public. I don't, I couldn't tell you. Right. I couldn't tell you a hard answer on that.
Okay.
And I'm curious to see what happens with those because the rhetoric around them goes, okay, we will place this here. We will pay for more police enforcement around it. And also they're temporary. They're not permanent shelters. They will be closed down within a couple of years. The problem is going to take more than a couple of years to solve. Like just in the number of how like permanent housing units you need to build because we are so far down the hole, you're going to like, it's going to take decades to do that. And people, what's going to happen, what's happened in San Diego, which San Diego, after in 2017, San Diego had a hepatitis outbreak in its downtown area, which basically forced the city very quickly to shelter a whole bunch of people very quickly. And they sheltered them in these like sprung sort of tent-like structures. The challenge that's happened in San Diego and is happening locally in the El Puente shelter is basically people move into these shelters, but like they're still dealing with the extraordinarily limited affordable housing stock that we have. So if somebody's in the shelter, they still don't really have income. They don't really, they're like, they can work to build it. But like, again, affording like a market rate apartment in Los Angeles is, as we all know, like largely impossible if you're poor. Like long-term, say the city of LA does open 24 shelters. I don't know how you would close them anytime soon because people are still going to, because the need is so great. Like, I mean, if you had, if you opened 240 shelters, like the need, like maybe then you would like at least shelter people, but then there's nowhere for people to go after that shelter because our affordable housing stock is non-existent.
And then there's a couple stats from some of your recent stories that I have been kind of like your eyes pop out of your skull. And one is that maybe some groups are good at finding people and getting them into housing, but it seems like the one program that's in partnership with the police is not very successful.
The LAPD, it's called the Hope Teams.
The Hope Teams.
The Homeless Outreach and Proactive Engagement Teams. Which LA spends, I can't remember off the top of my head the exact HOPE number because there's a number of different sort of teams that do effectively what HOPE does as well as other things. They do public right-of-way enforcement. So HOPE is one of the mechanisms by which LA enforces its, you can't have a tent on the sidewalk, you can't sit on the sidewalk, you can't have more than 60 gallons of personal property on the sidewalk. Rules of law, I guess, that it has. With HOPE, last year in 2018, according to LAPD reports, I believe it was they had more than 13,000 contacts with people on the street, of which about 380 of them had case manager assessments, which is, it's a key part basically for where people get actually entered into the case management system.
So first of all, that number, right?
Yeah,
that is very small.
Okay, we'll keep going. The next part is more shocking.
Yeah,
I feel like.
Okay. And then the next number is that of all those 13,000 people who had contact with an LAPD HOPE team that LAPD logged contact with, there might be more, but at least 13,000 people had contact with the HOPE team. 10 of them were moved into permanent housing.
10.
Yeah.
Over a course of a year is what?
The year 2018.
Right. So clearly, I mean, and we should mention there are other teams that are doing great work and more successful in their, you know, housing and getting people connected to services and all these different things. But this number alone, and also how much of the homelessness service money is going to security around Bridge housing, all these things, you know, right? It's like this, we're paying all this money for like officers to just walk around, have interactions with people that are not resulting in help. And that to me is a huge missed opportunity.
It is factually not working.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, why?
I mean, I asked why.
I'm glad you did.
I asked this. You're not the only one who asked this question. I asked, it was the mayor's office in a press briefing 2 weeks ago, why, okay, so if the Hope Team results are like this, what is the purpose of a Hope Team? And there wasn't an answer, because the answer is that they're for right-of-way enforcement, which is basically when the city gets its 311 requests. Okay, well, they got to respond to 311 requests somehow. These Venice business owners, it's largely like business and homeowners all over the city. Like, these 311 requests about this encampment on the street, it's make it go away, happens, like, there's so many of them. Which, like, I understand what the city, like, I mean, to throw them a bone, like, I understand the position that the mayor's office is in, because they have to appease these constituents who are, like, well-moneyed and influential and, like, will stop at nothing to get their way. Mm-hmm. Like, the effect is basically then you send police and sanitation to make the encampment go away. Colloquially, they're called sweeps. Mm-hmm. Officially, they're called cleanups. And in 2018, the last year's budget, fiscal year 18-19, LA, basically by me going through the budget and looking at the number of sort of sweep related programs, LA spent about $30 million on that. This year's budget, the numbers, and it's a conservative estimate, but I feel comfortable saying it's a conservative estimate, is $50 million, doing basically these sanitation, police, and there are outreach workers there too. But the numbers, as we heard earlier, are not particularly good, basically because when the garbage truck is there waiting, it's not really the most opportune time to do outreach, because people are kind of under duress and they're more concerned about, hey, I don't want to lose all my stuff. I'm not going to do a case manager assessment right now. I don't care about the coordinated entry system. I don't throw out my medicine. It's an inopportune time to reach out and try and get people into the system. So, I mean,
if that number is $30 million that they spend on, like, Hope Teams, for example, and that ended up getting 10 people into housing, $30 million of, like, $500,000 per supportive housing unit could get 60 people into, you could build a structure of 60 units. So you could be six times more effective by just putting up a building and moving people inside.
So in the new budget, LA allocates the city. Okay, so LHASA, LA Homeless Services Authority, is what's called a joint powers agency between LA City and LA County. Mm-hmm. It is the main homeless services response mechanism in Los Angeles County. The city of LA's 2019-2020, the new budget, the budget proposal, it hasn't been approved yet. City of LA allocates about $35 million for LHASA. The city of LA allocates about $50 million for its sweep sanitation police enforcement infrastructure, which we'll see what happens. There's a lot of...
Maybe this year it'll work.
Right now is a really interesting moment because of... courts have said that you can't criminalize people for sleeping outside.
We talked about the Ninth Circuit just reaffirmed that ruling. Yes.
Yeah. And that's and we'll see how this shakes out. I don't know what's going to happen. We will find out.
We'll find out. Thank you so much, Matt, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for following Scott at S.A. Frazee, F-R-A-Z-I-E. Thank you for following Matt at On That Bombshell. We will be back next week on LA Podcast. Bye.
LA Podcast. LA Podcast. LA Podcast gonna have